Breaking news this hour from townhall.com. I'm Keith Peters. The Trump administration has announced several arrests following a recent crackdown on the MS-13 international gang in the United States. Attorney General William Barr describes why MS-13's violence has drawn the attention of federal law enforcement.
MS-13 is somewhat unique in this sense. They have the street savagery that you would see in a gang. It is not driven by commercial interests the way, for example, the mafia traditionally was. It's about honor of being the most savage, bloodthirsty person you can be and building up a reputation as a killer.
The announcement came a day after grand juries in New York City and Nevada handed up new charges against nearly two dozen MS-13 members, ranging from drug dealing and kidnapping to murder and racketeering. Prominent Twitter accounts, including Barack Obama, Joe Biden, and Bill Gates, have been hacked in an apparent Bitcoin scam. BBC correspondent Sophie Long reports.
The tweets, which appeared on the accounts of billionaires Elon Musk and Bill Gates, encouraged people to send thousands of dollars of digital currency to a Bitcoin account with the promise of receiving double the amount in return. Similar posts appeared on Amazon boss Jeff Bezos' account and those of former President Barack Obama and current presidential hopeful Joe Biden. Corporate accounts for both Apple and Uber were also targeted. Records indicate the scammers could have received more than $100,000 worth of cryptocurrency. A spokesperson for the social media platform said they are investigating and taking steps to fix the security incident.
American Airlines is telling 25,000 workers that they could lose their jobs in October because of the sharp drop in air travel during the virus pandemic. The airline said Wednesday it was starting new offers of buyouts and partially paid leave, which it hopes will reduce the number of furloughs. On Wall Street, the Dow by 227 points. More on these stories at townhall.com.
Relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at relieffactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. Relieffactor.com, relieffactor.com. Be the next success story.
In these challenging times, what is really happening? Is there a force behind it all? If you believe in the freedoms that founded America, if you're looking for answers, go to ProfitToAmerica.com. That's ProfitToAmerica.com. And download the free book, A Fresh Wind. Is God using this pandemic to bring us back to our roots? Go to ProfitToAmerica.com. That's ProfitToAmerica.com.
Do you or a member of your family suffer from chronic pain? Would you like to make the pain go away? Hey, Kevin Wall here. Then you need to check out the Pain Injury Brain Center of America, now open in Las Vegas. At PIPCOA, they treat your chronic pain without addictive drugs and with non-invasive pain-free therapy. I suffered from chronic pain due to an impingement of my rotator cuff. I tried cortisone shots, painful physical therapy, nothing worked. Then a friend suggested I contact PIPCOA, and after just 6-hour-long treatments, the pain went away. In fact, I canceled my scheduled surgery. And after a brief hiatus due to the coronavirus, PIPCOA is back accepting appointments. Whether your pain comes from headaches, a disc injury, broken bones, hip or knee injury, neuropathy, even PTSD, regardless of the source of your pain, PIPCOA can make the pain go away. You don't have to live with the chronic pain. Make the pain go away. Call PIPCOA at 702-546-8767. That number again, 702-546-8767.
It's 5:04. This is a KMCQ News Flash. I'm Jim Dallas. The Nevada legislature, into day 7 of its special session, had lightweight agendas yesterday, both houses passing a resolution calling on the federal government to provide additional flexible funding for the Silver State to help Nevada manage its fiscal shortfall. A special session was called by Governor Sisolak to address the state's $1.2 billion budget shortfall, which is about 25% of the state's budget. 37 Clark County bars are taking Governor Sisolak to court, looking to reverse his recent directive closing bars to slow the spread of the coronavirus, claiming they have been unfairly singled out. The lawsuit seeks a court order rescinding the governor's directive, which went into effect this past Friday. Bars in 7 Nevada counties were elevated coronavirus rates were closed under that directive. The governor's office declined comment on the lawsuit. Well, the judge who will decide whether the state's unemployment office must pay Nevada gig workers immediately will at least have the weekend to think things over. The judge in the case, Barry Breslow, moved a hearing in that class action lawsuit from tomorrow to Monday. A lawsuit filed back in June seeks court intervention involving immediate payouts and pending benefits under the PUA program.
KCQ On-Time Traffic is powered by Meineke Car Care Centers.
Come in right now for a synthetic blend oil change for just $17.95, along with a free AC inspection.
As we take a quick glance at the traffic cams, no restrictions as you work your way through the Spaghetti Bowl on the 515 to Henderson and the 95 West off to Summerlin. Do look for moderate flows, 215 West at Green Valley, and lane restrictions. That is Eastern at the 215 interchange.
Gather around!
Washington, D.C. It got a lot of evil there, but we're getting it out step by step. A lot of evil. A lot of bad people. A lot of bad people. A lot of fake media. Look at them. A lot of fake media. NBC is perhaps worse than CNN, I have to tell you. And MSNBC is horrible.
Check it out!
It's 1999. I'm on Meet the Press, a show now headed by Sleepy Eyes Chuck Todd. He's a sleeping son of a bitch, I'll tell you.
That sounds awfully harsh. Why can't you be a little more supportive?
Number one! Time is running out! Number two!
Ladies and gentlemen, Kevin Wall.
And don't forget, this hour brought to you by Las Vegas Cyclery, featuring kids' bikes, affordable hybrids, mountain bikes, and a wide variety of the latest e-bikes, the electric bikes. Check them out at LasVegasCyclery.com. That's LasVegasCyclery.com. There is a great debate going on right now all across America and here in Nevada, and in particular in Southern Nevada and the Clark County School District, as to whether to send the kids back to school on August 24th. Do you send them back in this hybrid way with just 2 days of brick-and-mortar school learning and 3 days online learning? Did the kids learn anything after about March 17th when schools started closing down? And most people that I know of that have kids say they didn't learn a lot. They really honestly didn't. Tell you what, let's do this. Check in with Jonathan Butcher. He is a senior policy analyst at the Heritage Foundation. He has looked at this subject every which way but loose. And I got to ask you, a lot of my friends in education, a lot of my friends who have kids, who have students in the Clark County School District, they say not much happened, not much happened, not much learning happened after these kids went home and they did the so-called distance learning. You've had a chance to look at this. First of all, does this distance learning thing work for anybody, parents, teachers, school districts, kids?
Well, I think in some cases it did for those schools that had been doing it before, right? We've had full-time virtual schools operating around the U.S. For well over a decade, and those schools have adapted procedures and instructional methods that people choose, right? I mean, people choose into these. They're either private schools or online charter schools. So in those cases where people know what they're signing up for, that's one thing. When you have districts that move to this sort of ad hoc situation, well, now that was wildly uneven, I think, is a safe description. And I think
Jonathan, you're being kind when you use a term like that.
Well, I think there are some. So we'll take an example. So Miami-Dade, for example, down in Florida, there are reports there that that district tended to adapt to the changing conditions better than others. But I can give an example just as quickly of districts that did not. So LA Unified, who, as you may know and listeners may know, has already said that they are going to be fully online again at the beginning of this fall. Well, reports came that they lost perhaps as many as 15,000 students, if not more, who didn't show up at all for online or virtual instruction. And similar reports came from Philadelphia, Detroit, even across South Carolina.
How do we do this, Jonathan, when you've got a very uneven landscape when it comes to Wi-Fi and having tablets and having laptops and things like that? That's not something we're gonna fix overnight. How bad is it?
Well, you're exactly right that it's different from place to place, and that's why the solutions are going to have to be unique from place to place. I think that local schools and local health officials are going to have to be in touch with each other and decide what the outbreak looks like in their area and decide if they're ready to have students back in person full time. I will say this, I'll say two important things, right? So one is that federal guidance is very broad. It's never going to be specific enough for every local area. And then secondly, the reports that we have of the effect of this virus on young people from both in the United States, but especially in reports coming from other countries who are a little bit further along in this process than we are, indicate that students or children are the least affected. So based on the evidence that we've got, one would say, look, if the best place for kids to be is in person, if we're trying to get them back to some sort of school routine, and they are the least likely to be affected by this virus, why, that points to getting them back in class as quickly as possible.
Again, Jonathan Butcher joining us, senior policy analyst at the Heritage Foundation. You know, it used to be that we worried about kids getting to school, staying in school, truancy officers to make sure they stay in school. But now, mainly because we were afraid they weren't going to learn. Now, we've got this new thing where we're afraid they're not going to eat, that schools have become the folks that feed our children. Parents have abdicated that responsibility. How important is that part of this?
Well, the National School Lunch Program is an albatross in itself. I mean, that program is one of the high-need programs, according to federal auditors, because of the amount of lost money every year in that program, and that means money going to ineligible students. It also has some expansive eligibility that has lunches going to students who are not poor and are actually middle or upper income, based on some complicated measurements now that go into deciding who gets these. So it is, not only is it a problem that we expect schools to do more than just teach math and reading, but we've created this federal program that, especially over the past 25 years, has demonstrated to be highly inefficient.
Well, and one of the things we've done with the school lunch program is there was a stigma that supposedly was attached. So in many schools, they said, well, we're not just going to give the poor kids free food. We're going to give everybody free food because we don't want there to be a stigma that, oh, that's a poor kid, he's eating free.
Well, that's right. There's a provision that came into the law about a decade ago called the community eligibility provision. And this particular part of federal law says that if there's a certain percentage, 40% or more, of the children qualify as low income or qualify for free meals under other indicators, the whole school will get free meals. And also, they figured out a way to combine the percentages across nearby schools to average them out to be 40% or more. And then you can have groups of schools that will qualify regardless of student income. And listen, the object of that program was to help students in need. And if there is an appropriate role for the federal government to provide for those who cannot provide for themselves, then that is something that they should focus on. But what it's become now is really, the atypical, right, expansive government bureaucracy.
So what happens to these kids? They did nothing. They did nothing with the distance learning, the online learning over the summer here. Now you've got the prospect of schools in San Diego and L.A. that are not going to reopen. They say they're not going to reopen. How far behind are these kids going to be? And is there going to be a point where we're going to have to give some sort of standardized test to kids in these districts to say, when they do eventually go back to school, hey, how far behind are they?
Well, I think that would be an effective practice anyway, especially for those schools that are going to be reopening in person, is to have some sort of diagnostic assessment, you know, when they come back. And these aren't don't have to be terribly long. There are companies out there that make them that will help teachers understand where a student is so that they know how to design the rest of the semester. As for L.A., San Diego, Atlanta is another district, Nashville, that said that they're going online immediately. So a national poll, a nationally representative poll that came out last week, had parents saying, 71% of parents saying that their students did not learn as much online as they would have had they been in person. There's another study conducted by a testing company that estimates that students are going to lose anywhere from 30 to 50% of whatever they gained in the past year by the time they get back to school in person. So it's a very serious concern, especially for large districts like the ones we just listed, where those are the places where students may have just fallen off the map.
So who's right, who's wrong? Is the president right for saying we've got to get our kids back into schools, or is the president wrong?
Well, it's difficult because of the hyper-politicized culture that we're in right now. I think that anything the president says, there are immediately going to be opponents who will object. At least the teacher unions are consistent. I guess we can say that because, you know, years ago they said they would never work with Secretary DeVos or, you know, President Trump. So I suppose we can't blame them for objecting. But nevertheless, it's become something where a national consensus really has thrown, I think, some families into confusion and created a bit of uncertainty because the ultimate decisions really need to be made by local educators, local school leaders, as they talk with, again, local health officials. Take, for example, these districts we were just talking about, L.A., San Diego. Well, Orange County has said that schools can open in person there. So I think that while L.A.'s situation in particular is one that deserves a closer inspection, but this idea that you can have a state with districts making different choices based on what they see around them, I do think that that's an appropriate way for people to, you know, local leaders to be making decisions for themselves about what they think is best. Again, with LA, they've had years, frankly, of financial trouble, a huge achievement gap, and now thousands of students who were lost in the, you know, part of the last semester. I think there's every reason for that district to find any way they can to get as many students back in person as quickly as they can.
When you come back, Jonathan, I want to talk to you about the politics of this, because this has become a political football that folks are trying to deal with. The president's trying to deal with it. The Democrats are trying to deal with it. Our own superintendent of schools is trying to deal with it. He's being accused of lying by the governor. There's all kinds of stuff, and it all involves whether or not to send the kids back to school. We'll do that and more coming up. I'm Kevin Wall. You are listening to AM 670 KMZQ.
Breaking news, newsmakers, and political heavy hitters, all before the sun comes up. The Hugh Hewitt Show, weekday mornings from 3 to 6 on AM 670 KMZQ. Talk radio done right.
Less is more. This is true of the 2020 Range Rover Evoque. With dramatic styling and unparalleled capability, the Range Rover Evoque offers much more than you would expect from a compact SUV. And with 0% interest currently available for up to 72 months on approved credit, it's never been a better value. Come see for yourself today at Jaguar Land Rover Las Vegas, 6425 Roy Horn Way, or visit us online at jlrlv.com.
Hey, Kevin Wall here. Are you in need of a healthcare program? Well, you're in luck. As a member of Liberty HealthShare, you're part of a community that comes together to share their medical expenses. You can sign up throughout the year with memberships starting as early as the following month. And there are no contracts or commitments. Programs start as low as $199 per month, and there's no network. So you can choose your own doctors and hospitals. Liberty HealthShare is a nonprofit ministry, not insurance. So your money goes towards helping other members with their eligible medical expenses. And in your time of need, other members are there for you. You can feel good knowing that you're part of a community of like-minded individuals who understand the importance of people coming together to bear one another's burdens.
To find out more, call 855-58-LIBERTY. That's 855-58-LIBERTY. Or go to libertyhealthshare.org/Kevin Wall. That's libertyhealthshare.org/Kevin Wall.
Laborers Union Local 872 is committed to ensuring the safety and health of their workforce. Here are five recommendations to keep you and everyone safe on the job site. Perform a self-assessment before arriving on the job site. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Keep your distance. Adhering to the regulations and limit large group interactions. Laborers Union Local 872. Vegas strong, union proud.
Yo, it's Mike P. And the next time you're in your car and the police hit you with this, there is no need to fear. Tickets Be Gone is here. Call them right now at 702-703-3300. Traffic tickets, warrants, DUI, criminal case, all starting at $25. When the police hit you with the, there's no need to fear. Tickets Be Gone LV is here. Call them at 702-703-3300 and make sure you tell them Mike P. sent you.
Let's face it, these are challenging times. Hey, Kevin Wall here for SRT Special Services. Since 2014, SRT Special Services has provided Southern Nevada businesses with executive protection, safe rooms, residential security, and more. Now, in the COVID-19 era, it's important to know who's coming into your place of business. Ask the pros at SRT Special Services about the Liberty AI with facial recognition and thermal scanning. The Liberty AI can let you know if the next customer through your front door is running a temperature, protecting your employees, your customers, and your corporate liability. Facial recognition and temperature scanning technology has been out there for years. Now, the security pros at SRT Special Services can offer the Liberty AI at a price that even small mom-and-pop businesses can afford. If your business deals with the general public, you need the Liberty AI for SRT Special Services. Call 702-221-1942. That's 702-221-1942. Call today.
This is Lee Habib, and I get asked all the time why we do all of those segments on Our American Stories about people who found the American dream. And we do it because it's true. This country has great stories to tell, and we tell them on this station every night, because one thing I've learned is this: there's an American story in all of us. Join me for Our American Stories right here.
Heard nightly, Monday through Friday, 10 p.m. to midnight, and Sunday, 9 a.m. to noon, only on AM 670.
Big name guests, the news of the day, mixed in with a diversity of opinions. Live and local with Kevin Wall, weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 on AM 670 KMZQ. Talk radio done right.
And this hour, brought to you by attorney Craig Mueller of Mueller & Associates. When you need an attorney, you need someone who shares your conservative values. Call Craig Mueller at Mueller & Associates. He can be reached right now, in fact, 702-887-1731. That number again, 702-887-1731. There's the president. He has urged kids to get back into the classroom. You got the teachers' union. You got school districts. You've got governors. You got a lot of stakeholders that are talking about whether kids should or should not be back in brick-and-mortar classrooms. Can we talk about the politics? What's the politics of this whole thing about?
Well, I think the president and Secretary DeVos have been very supportive of parent choice in education, which is something that really rankles traditional teacher unions. And I think that it carries over into some of the other issues. There have been several others. I mean, dealing with school discipline is something that I think the DeVos administration has made what I think are some very sound policy decisions over, following some solid research on that. That has also, made the unions and their traditional allies upset. So this issue now of whether to reopen is, you know, it's also something where unions feel like they should demonstrate that they can push back against what the president's suggesting.
If some of these school districts, let's say the Las Vegas, the Clark County School District, sends the kids back on August 24th, 2 days in brick and mortar, 3 days in online learning, and in 2 weeks, nobody or in 2 weeks, lots of kids test positive. Will this be a signal that they were that their district was right or wrong? I mean, is this might somebody have to pay a political price in November?
Well, I mean, that's very possible. I think that a way to prevent the worst outcome would be for those people to be prepared to self-quarantine. For anyone that shows any signs of symptoms, to stay home. And so I think with, you know, again, the widespread online instruction was very difficult to do across lots of students in large districts. But if you shrink that pool a little bit and say, all right, let's get as many kids back in class as we can, anyone who shows any kinds of symptoms or parents who are fearful, say, of a child with special needs, we can have them at home, perhaps getting some more one-on-one instruction with teachers who now don't have to deal with 25 students doing online instruction. Maybe they just have two, right, or three. And that, I think, may be a more manageable approach to handling what we hope is a phased-in process.
Again, Jonathan Butcher joining us, senior policy analyst at the Heritage Foundation. Final couple of minutes. Is it possible, though, that we might end up getting school districts that have some success, maybe five-day-a-week schools where there is no spike? Is it possible that, to borrow a golf term, that a lot of these other school districts will, quote, go to school, if you will, no pun intended, on these other schools and say, hey, maybe this thing will work. Maybe we're needlessly worried about spikes of kids bringing home COVID-19 to mom and dad and grandma and grandpa. I mean, we've heard all these horror stories. Is it possible, though, that with some success stories, maybe other districts will say, well, wait a minute, maybe we need to take another look at this?
Well, we certainly hope so. I mean, we certainly hope the best for the teachers, for the students, first and foremost, and for their families. And we want that to be the ultimate outcome, no matter what. I think the schools, again, just need to be aware of what their school community is ready for and what parents are prepared to do. I think the national surveys have shown that it's kind of right around the 50% mark when it comes to parents who are ready to send kids back or not. There was a poll from Gallup about 2 weeks ago that showed it was just over 50% of parents were ready for students to go back. There's a poll that Politico released just today, I believe, that showed it was right around 50 were not ready to have students go back. And those numbers are going to vary around the country, you know, depending on what state you're in, what locality you're in. And so the solutions should be varied according to that.
And by the way, we've heard from a lot of the stakeholders, but we haven't heard from a lot of the kids. Do the kids want to go back? Do they miss their friends?
I think there's been a lot of that. I was talking with some parents and students who use what are called education savings accounts. I think those in Nevada may be familiar with those.
Yes.
It was almost a possibility there in Nevada. There's some families using them in North Carolina, and I asked them what the experience had been like for them, and they said, yes, you know, our kids miss, you know, they miss their friends, they miss their teachers. It's, especially for the younger kids, it's hard to understand exactly what's going on, and it's hard to understand why they can't, you know, be back in class. I would say students using those accounts, actually, I found were the quickest to adapt of all the families and schools I've talked to, because with an account, parents could continue to find individual tutors, even if they had to adjust to an online educational therapy experience. They could still find online classes right away from educators that they knew. So those accounts really made it a very flexible and, I think, not perfect, right, but almost seamless experience for a lot of those families.
I still believe that the ESAs, the Education Savings Account, which we passed, and it was deemed constitutional, but the means of funding it was not. And then we ended up with Democrats that absolutely were dominated by the teachers union and said absolutely positively, we will not give you one dime for education savings accounts. I happen to believe it's one of the biggest missed opportunity that our state has had when it comes to education. And maybe that's why we're generally 50 or 49th or 48th among the states because of that. Jonathan, if folks want to know what you guys are up to, and your stuff is absolutely brilliant. I love reading through it today. Talk a little bit about how folks can find out more about what you guys are up to.
Sure. You can find what we've written on heritage.org, and a lot of the commentary that we have had elsewhere also gets put on that site as well.
Thank you so much, Jonathan. We will talk with you, and we'll find